the bucks, dog.
You sure you with the skills?
All the way, Raymond James, dog. Chat the talents, dog.
You
crazy? Fucking is, dog.
Cowboys?
Don't talk about the buck, bro. Welcome to Tampa.
This is the Pewter Plank Podcast. My name is Ken Bulkey. I'm joined, as always, with Leo Howell. And we got a new coach in Tampa. His name is Lovie Smith. Formerly with the Bears, then formerly with the Rams, then formerly with our very own Bucks. Probably one of the best coaches on the market, but he is the guy, so we don't have to worry about anybody else at this point. So, Leo, give me the rundown on what you think about Leo. About what you think about Leo. You are Leo.
Leo's a pretty good
dude. What you think about Lovie. That's very confusing. Too many L's.
But in terms of Lovie Smith, yeah, like you said, I think he was the best coach that you could have got this offseason, assuming that the rumors about John Gruden and Bill Cowher, you know, whatever. I don't really care about that stuff, but they came out. Assuming that those two aren't interested. And even then, I think I'd rather have Smith than Cowher. And maybe Gruden. Like I said, it's pretty close. So, yeah, definitely the best coach out there. I mean, the Lions were interested, and the Bucks beat them to his services. So that's encouraging. I mean, consistent winner. Had a rough first year in Chicago, but once he kind of got everything plugged in and in place, they won every year. They didn't lose double-digit games after his first year. And quite frankly, for Tampa Bay, that's an accomplishment.
Which is really pathetic.
Yeah, no, it's not something that we should aspire to as Bucks fans, but yeah, moving forward, you can expect a lot less losing because that's just not what Lovie Smith does. He does not lose frequently. I mean, multiple playoff appearances, had a Super Bowl appearance, but it was ultimately his offense that was his undoing, and that remains the question. Overall, I like the hire. I think they could have been a little more creative. And gone for a guy that was a little more risky, but also potentially more rewarding, like a Daryl Bevel or a Greg Roman that could install, you know, their offense as the head coach. But in terms of just a pure head coach who has proven experience leading and managing a whole roster and just being respected, it's well respected by players, you can't get any better than Lovie Smith.
I actually thought it was better to go with somebody like Lovie rather than to go down the more risky road, because the last two were about as risky as they get, with Raheem, who God knows what you were getting in Raheem, and it looked like it was going to work for a little bit, and then not so much. And then there was Schiano, which is like bringing the authoritarian from college, and obviously we saw how that worked. So I actually liked going back to somebody who has coached before in the NFL, certainly somebody who has had success in the NFL, not quite to the level of a Bill Cowher or John Gruden, because he hasn't won that Super Bowl, but he's been there. He's, like you said, perennial winner, and most importantly, which, like I said, is pathetic that we even have to bring this up, but he's not a perennial loser. He's not a guy that allows 10 losses, mainly because his defenses were never at a level that would have allowed that. And as long as you have a great defense, you really can't lose that often. You'll lose, and they're not going to be 16-0 next year. But with Lovie Smith and this defense, instantly, it's almost like adding another great piece to the defense. It's taking a very good defense that has two All-Pros and Darrelle Revis and a number of other good pieces, and throwing in a guy who should be able to coach them to a level that should be even better than what they were. So that's certainly exciting. The nerve-wracking part is that for all his years in Chicago, and I actually lived in Chicago during just about all of it, they could not ever figure out how to play offense. And that kind of scares me, because the landscape of the NFL right now is, do you score, yes or no? That's about it. And there are going to be a couple of teams coming up in the playoffs this coming week that are going to try to challenge that. Carolina, Seattle, you know, that can maybe you don't need to score as much, but it does scare me a little bit that Lovie's offensive talents are pretty bad.
Yeah, that's the big concern, and that's kind of what my first instinct was with this coaching search, was who's the best offensive mind you can get a head coach. But ultimately, a head coach doesn't run the team on an everyday basis. And Joe Bussell mentioned this on the last podcast, is that Tony Dungy always says that the higher up the coaching staff you go, the less actual coaching you do. And once you become a head coach, you're kind of like a CEO more than you are, you know, some master game planner who comes up with this intricate office.
Unless you're Greg Schiano, right? Because he apparently wanted to run everything, including the temperature in the room.
Yeah.
He actually asked us if we could lower this podcast by 2 decibels. That's a real thing. He actually called me and asked, and I did it, but now he's gone, so we're back up to the normal decibel level. So hopefully this is better.
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
That's a real thing. That happened.
Yeah. Did he interrupt your pizza party with Calvin Johnson?
He did. That's actually the exact time that occurred. So yes.
Okay.
Get out of my fantasy land.
That aside, I don't think that Lovey's offensive history necessarily is something that has to continue, but it really depends on how he manages to influence the decisions of the offensive coaching staff, how he decides to delegate things. And, you know, apparently since he's got a clause in his contract that gives him, you know, final say on personnel decisions, you know,
which terrifies me,
how he makes those decisions, what he takes into consideration, if he's using Jeff Tedford and, you know, the front office staff to kind of help him with those decisions, because there was some offensive talent in Chicago that was brought in under Lovey. I mean, Matt Forte was really a kind of a diamond in the rough kind of guy that has turned into, you know, one of the better running backs in the league. And I mean, Jay Cutler was already Jay Cutler, and your thoughts on Jay Cutler are your thoughts on Jay Cutler. But I mean, making a move like that, as opposed to being stuck with, you know, Rex Grossman every year for the rest of eternity, you know, it's not the worst move you could have made. And part of the situation in Chicago was that, you know, they had Jerry Angelo as well. And in Tampa, it seems like it's going to be more of just what Lovey thinks and kind of, you know, working with the front office staff of a few people that he already knows. But I think that's all really going to influence the offense as much, if not more, than, you know, just the fact that Lovey never had an offense. It's that Lovey's going to have a different way to approach his offense in Tampa. I think he's going to have the keys to it, but he's not going to try to drive it. I think he's going to, you know, delegate all that to Tedford, but his influence on the personnel will be interesting to see how he handles that.
And that's one thing that the second I read that, I'm still waiting for what the general manager decision is going to be, but I'm really hoping that they name a general manager and they have a general manager and there's not this partial GM situation for Lovey, because in the past it just hasn't worked. It's just not something that has been successful with people like Shanahan's really the one that comes up to mind, is he had that. There were some other situations in the past where people have full control over what's going on. Now, I don't think Lovey's a controlling guy, so I don't think he necessarily is somebody who's my way or the highway. I have heard from some of my friends in Chicago that he is stubborn. I believe that's more over how he handles the media so as much as how he actually coaches the team, because he tends to say the exact same thing after every single game, which we're going to get used to. And
yeah,
I'm pretty sure that by week 6, his press conferences are going to become unwatchable he's not demonstrative like some of the guys we've had in the past. He's not going to say things Raheem did, certainly not going to say anything like John Gruden did. I never believed anything that came out of Schiano's mouth after about 3 weeks, so I never really cared about his. But the offense is definitely concerning. I'm more concerned right now, as we're doing this podcast a few hours before the press conference, and we're going to do one next week to kind of recap anything that came out of that. And I think we'll have a little bit more information about who's who by that point. But I'm concerned about that Lovey has the end say, because if you have a general manager who's doing his job and doing his job well, he's taking a lot more time evaluating talent. And if he does all of this work to evaluate a player and says, this guy will fit, And then Lovey says, yeah, I don't think so. And then that's it. That's kind of the worst kind of work environment you can possibly be under. I just can't imagine that being successful. And that really concerns me that he does have that power and that there is going to be a situation at some point where somebody is gone or somebody should have come in that doesn't happen because of that ultimate say that I just don't think that was necessary. Maybe that was the selling point to get him here. I don't know, but I'm hoping that doesn't come up and bite us in the ass sometime in the future.
I understand that, but I think that there's a difference between having final say and
actually using it and actually acting upon it.
Yeah, and being the general manager. I think that this is going to neuter the general manager's position in a way, because basically he's going to have to prepare his scouting reports for players in such a way as to present them to someone rather than to just make a decision. So that is going to change the way that he operates. But everything that we're hearing now is that Chris Ballard is going to be the general manager, and we don't know for sure. And you know, by the time this comes out, we may know that for sure. But with Ballard, who's already a friend of Lovie Smith's, there's already chemistry there, which is what's encouraging about that. Like, if they had kept Mark Dominic, but then gave Lovie Smith full, you know, final say over personnel decisions, that would concern me. Because that's
an
established
general manager. And that basically would undermine him, yeah.
But I think when it's a new guy who's already got a relationship with Lovie and already kind of knows what he's looking for, I think that's a little more acceptable, and I think it's something that can work, because I've heard multiple different things about the way that Schiano and Dominic interacted. I know that there was some talk that, you know, they didn't see eye to eye, which you could kind of tell, because Schiano had to, like you said, Schiano said that he and Dominic talked all the time and got along really well, which probably meant they didn't. And you could kind of tell by the way that they played. There was a ton of talent on that team, and they went 4-12, so yeah, it's not like Dominic was necessarily to blame. But that lack of chemistry between the two, that may have also been what got them fired. And, you know, is it sometimes a good thing to have conflict and to spur discussions about personnel decisions? Yeah, I mean, it can turn out to be good. But when the end decision is that you run your franchise quarterback, potentially, out of town, and also you're running bit players out of town who go on to be impressive players elsewhere, like LeGarrette Blount, Wallace Gilberry, George Selvey, you know, that's not constructive, obviously. There's a lot of failed results from that relationship, where if a guy's not a Schiano man, but he is a Dominic found off the scrap heap guy, and they let him go and he succeeds somewhere else, like that's not what you want. So this is really truly the Glazers just going in a different direction and saying, whoever the GM is, they're gonna know that they can't just make a unilateral decision. There's not going to be any, you know, this is what we're doing and you're going to be okay with it, which you kind of figure may have happened during the Raheem and Schiano eras, that Dominic may have just made decisions because he was the longest tenured member of the Tampa Bay staff in general. And so he probably got a lot of power to do that sort of stuff. And, obviously, he didn't get to hire coaches, but besides that, you know, like maybe signing Vincent Jackson or signing Carl Nix or signing Deshaun Goldson, and those could have just been unilateral decisions that now would come under the advisement of Lovie, and it would be more of a situation of, hey, Lovie, you know, Rex Grossman's a free agent. Here's what he's done in the past. And it's not literally Rex Grossman, but just as a name, because he is a free agent.
Please, dear God, no.
I'd rather have him than Orlovsky at the end of the bench,
I guess. But if he has to play, ugh.
Well, if Orlovsky has to play, it's the same reaction. But no, I agree. But anyway, but the point is that it would be like, here's what he does. I really think we should get him. You know, if it's a pro guy, you can say our pro guy scouted him. He saw this. He really likes them. If it's a college guy, you can say our college guy scouted him. He saw this. He really likes him. And like I said, I don't think that Lovey's the kind of guy who's just going to say, no, I want Mike Glennon. I recruited him at Rutgers. Like, he's not going to say exactly that, but he's not going to say that. He's not going to say, no, I don't want Levante David. I want Lance Briggs instead. Like, that doesn't seem like the kind of guy that he is. Because he brought in, you know, that coaching staff brought in some good talent in Chicago. And I feel like that's something that, you know, sort of like with the whole Revis thing, and we'll probably touch on that here in a second. It's not the habit of a good coach to get rid of good players. So, or to reject good players either. And
that's actually kind of where I wanted to go next, is one guy is Darrell Revis, yeah, that for whatever reason, the second Lovie was hired, people looked at what Lovie's done in the past, looked at what Darrell Revis does, and said, well, those two things don't match up. And what we've been taught as Buccaneer fans over the past 3 years or 2 years or so is, if things don't match, send them to the Patriots. That's been kind of the way it goes in this franchise. Luckily, Lovie came in instantly and said, yeah, I think we're going to probably find a way to use one of the best cornerbacks ever. We're going to go ahead and keep him. So can you just squash all of the rumors of anything that comes up and anything that anyone would ever think that Darrell Revis is A, not going to be a part of the Buccaneers next year, and B, not going to be utilized to the best of his abilities?
Yeah, that was ridiculous. I actually first saw people talking about that after Shiano was fired and before Lovie was hired. Like, there were already people talking about Revis getting cut, which is ridiculous, because at that time they were saying, I'm hearing that Darrell Revis may get cut, when there was no GM or coach on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And something tells me that the Glazer family has no reason to cut Darrell Revis unless he directly, like, insulted them and their family or something, which I doubt happened. So, yeah, it's ridiculous. Like I said before, it's not the habit of good coaches to get rid of good players. And is Darrell Revis making too much money for what he does? Maybe. Debatable. I don't think so. But he's making a lot of money, and so that makes him an easy target for these kind of rumors. But, like you said, he's one of the best corners ever, and playing on a surgically repaired knee in 2013, he pretty much had a Darrell Revis season, despite being used in a slightly
reduced way
at the beginning of the season. Well, I'm not entirely sure that all of that was because Sheridan was just completely incompetent. He was certainly incompetent, but I think that some of it was also because of his health early in the season. He was not used in the best way regardless, and that's something that coaching staff obviously answered for by being fired. But, he was used in a reduced way because of his injury, and he was used in a bad way because of bad coaching. I think those are both true statements. So with both of those aside, he'll be 2 years removed from an ACL injury and playing for a better defensive coach who isn't just a Tampa 2 coach. Yes, he learned the Tampa 2 in Tampa when he coached under Tony Dungy and Monty Kiffin. But then since then, he's been a multiple defense guy. He uses his talent. And to think that he's going to come into Tampa and make sweeping changes just to install a defense that's a little bit outdated at this point, and that he doesn't even run on a full-time basis anymore, is kind of silly. And really, replacing Darrell Revis would not be his first step if he was changing this to a Tampa 2 defense. There is Mason Foster as middle linebacker would be the first change he would make, because Mason Foster cannot play the mic in a Tampa 2 defense. And so all this talk about Darrell Revis this, Darrell Revis that, with the cap space that the Buccaneers have, I think it would still be worth it to have Darrell Revis as a Tampa 2 corner, even at $16 million. Because the Bucs aren't in any sort of cap trouble. And quite frankly, no matter what you ask Darrell Revis to do, he's going to be near the best at it at the corner position. I'm not sure that he'd have quite the same savvy as Rondé as a Tampa 2 corner. But, when it comes down to, okay, Darrell, this is your point in the play where you have to close on the guy and knock the ball away and or make a tackle, you know, I feel pretty confident that he can do that. But that's not what Lovie's going to do. And the report from Ian Rappaport even said that Lovie has big plans for him. And I believe him. Because Lovie is the kind of coach who's going to love having Darrell Revis, because he can do what Rex Ryan did, which is, okay, Revis has this one side of the field. Let me get really creative with the other 10 guys. And that's a huge asset. And that's something that Greg Schiano did not take advantage of.
And that's exactly what we thought was going to happen when he came over. That's yes. kind of what we talked about for weeks and weeks after we got him, was basically that we're going to be able to shut down one side of the field, and it should open up the rest of the game. I think if we are going to finally see that, and that's exciting to know. But the other thing that, for whatever reason, people always go back to that Tampa 2, and I think it's just an easy thing to do. I don't think that's necessarily the identity of what Lovie's defenses are. The identity of Lovie's defenses, to me, is take the ball away. That's all he preaches. That's the number one thing that he preaches when it comes to defense. And like I said, I've been in Chicago. I was around the media at times of what Lovie wanted when Lovie was there. And the fact was, he says the word takeaway more than he says almost any other word when it comes to defense. Yeah. And that's the identity of what the Bucks are going to be. That's what's going to change on this defense, is they're going to be focused on ripping the ball out and picking passes off. And then the other thing is, once they get them, they need to score. They're specifically instructed to score, which is sounds ridiculous, but that's the goal. That's what Lovie's MO is. It's not necessarily play the Tampa 2.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that the Bucks have the talent to do that sort of stuff next year.
They have more than enough. Yeah, defense. I mean, there's like I said earlier, two All-Pros and Darrelle Revis.
Yeah, and Mark Barron, who is definitely someone that Lovie never really had a player like, as far as I'm aware. I may not be remembering all the way back to the Super Bowl years very well, but I don't think he had a strong safety quite at that level. And then at the end, he certainly didn't, because, you know, Chris Conte or whatever his name is not very good at playing football. yeah, I mean, specifically with the corners, I mean, Peanut and Jennings and Vasher, I guess, before that, are all very good players, but he's never had anybody like Revis. So it's just silly to think that a good defensive coach is going to shy away from using a better player than he's ever had. Like, I just don't think that that's – I just think that's silly. I think that's
– Well, it would be dumb. Yeah. It would just be stupid. It would just be plain dumb to make your first decision when you're the head coach to come in and get rid of the team's best player. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, quite frankly, creating holes on a team that just went 4-12 is also not a good idea.
It's just stupid.
Yeah.
And I never thought it was going to happen. No. I never bought it for a second. But there are some more rumors of actually people coming in, and there's a lot of talk about, well, so Lovie comes in, and now it appears that Leslie Frazier is going to be the defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that's official yet. Confirm that. That's not official, right?
Not officially official, but it's all but official.
It seems like it'll probably be official within the next few hours when Lovie gets up on the
– The reports are that he specifically told Josina Anderson of ESPN that he is going to Tampa. So
okay. Well, the biggest rumor that's come out of that, and again, this tends to be fans making easy connections,
yes,
is Jared Allen is a free agent. Will Jared Allen fit in this scheme? I think absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think absolutely he'll fit on the other side of Adrian Claiborne and right next to Gerald McCoy would not be too bad. But do you think that's a legitimate thought, or is that just fans on Twitter saying Leslie Frazier coached Jared Allen, now Jared Allen may be coming here because we have Leslie Frazier? Is that a legitimate thought, or is that just us grasping at straws?
I don't think it makes it any more likely than it was before. I think that pursuing Jared Allen was something that the Bucks would probably do anyway. But the fact that Leslie Frazier is here gives a more insight into him. So you kind of get more of a scouting report on him than you would have previously. Because obviously you can watch all his tape and know, you know, what it is that he does, and you can do some background checks on him. But having Frazier means that you know everything the dude has done for the past – Frazier's been defensive coordinator since like 2007, I think, there. So he literally knows like everything that – Jared Allen has done for the past few years, and that's a valuable asset, but I don't think that makes it any sort of lock that Jared Allen becomes a Buccaneer, mainly because there's other defensive ends out there in this free agent class, specifically, you know, Greg Hardy being probably the best one, and I think that would be by far a better choice because he's younger and better right now. But obviously, that's going to be tough to pry him away from the Panthers, who will do everything in their power, even though they have no cap space to keep a guy like that. But, you know, there are other options out there, and I'm pretty sure Justin Tuck is one. Michael Johnson of the Bengals will also be available, even though he's kind of had a down year. But I think Allen is among the best options, and I certainly would love to see that, because, like you said, I think that him and McCoy and Claiborne with the right coaching is a pretty formidable group of three with, I think probably what we'll see is Spence and Golston rotating at the other defensive tackle spot, which I'm okay with both of those as well. I think that's a pretty good setup, and I think that that's, certainly possible, but I think it's a little lazy to just say, because Leslie Frazier's here, so too will Jared Allen be here.
Okay, let's move to the other side of the ball, a side of the ball I think we're going to talk about a lot in the next couple of years, because, like I mentioned, Lovie tends to not do so well offensively. The defense is always good. The defense always tends to win the games. And then when they lose, we start talking about offense. The decision that was made and has now been made official is that Jeff Tedford, formerly at Cal, formerly a coach of all sorts of different quarterbacks who have made the pros, most of which failed miserably, one of which is named Aaron Rodgers. He is now the offensive coordinator of the Buccaneers, unproven in the NFL, but seems to have some sort of a connection to Lovie and seems to be the guy that they wanted all along. The second after Lovie got hired, that was the guy it looked like they wanted an offensive coordinator, and now they have him. So talk a little bit about Jeff Tedford, and then we'll kind of go into how we should look at that and how we think that'll affect the 2014 Buccaneers.
Well, as you said, Tedford had an instant connection with Lovie as soon as Lovie's name came up. And from what I understand, I'm pretty sure that since both were fired in 2012 and did not take a job in 2013, that they both worked together during this past year, kind of talking about things and bouncing ideas off of each other. And so I think that's why he became such an instant connection to Lovie, is that he was literally chosen as Lovie's offensive coordinator well before Lovie became a head coaching candidate again. Because Lovie's had a year to consider why he got fired, and I think he realizes that it's offense. And so he sought out the opinion of a coach who was fired as well, and is kind of bouncing ideas off of him. And like you said, Tedford has a ton of experience. He's a quarterback guru. He's a quarterback himself, played in the CFL, and was Fresno State grad, went back to Fresno State and coached Trent Dilfer at Fresno State. And Trent Dilfer has nothing but great things to say about him. And I don't always respect what Trent Dilfer has to say about quarterbacks, but when he's talking from his personal experience and says that, you know, Tedford has a really good playbook and he prepares his quarterbacks really well, you know, I like that. One of the things he says is that you never feel like you don't have an answer for something that you see on the field, and that it's not about memorizing. It's about just learning his system and feeling comfortable with the things that he calls and the things that he does. Because one of his things that he talks about, Tedford, that is that he doesn't want people to just memorize his playbook, because that doesn't help an offense. That just, you become robots at that point. But what you want to do is understand the concepts of what he does, and in turn that helps you be an active part of making the offense better. So he's definitely kind of got a little, and it's obviously it's not the same, because Chip Kelly's just got crazy ideas that are working, but he's got some of those Chip Kelly things in that he sees offense as a more complex thing than just a bunch of plays and a bunch of players. Like, he's kind of got a philosophy across all of it, which is something that I don't think you can say about a guy like Mike Sullivan. I think Mike Sullivan was pretty limited in what he kind of thought about offense. I think he had set things that he wanted to do, and he tried to execute them. Whereas Tedford's adapted. There have been times where he's had two running backs and he's used both running backs, and he's split carries, and he's used zone blocking, and he's used man blocking, and he's had mobile quarterbacks and he's had immobile quarterbacks, and he's used them all really well. And he's also a guy that guys like to play for. Kyle Bowler, who was another one of the guys that was, he was one of the failures that you mentioned in terms of the NFL. He was great at Cal. And one of the things that Tedford did for him was in a game, he actually let him get the hat trick of different touchdowns. He let him run for one, throw for one, and catch one, just to kind of reward him, like just to kind of give him a day in the spotlight. And that's something that's cool. Like, I mean, obviously you can't do that sort of stuff in the NFL, but that's just something that when you consider, like, you're hiring Lovie Smith, who's really respected and guys really like him, I feel like Tedford's that same kind of guy. He came from a tough background. He, you know, worked his way into being a football player and then a football coach. And now, you know, he was a head coach for 11 years at one of the, you know, biggest colleges in the country. Like, that's a guy that people can respect and can really get behind. And I think that's a common thread among the guys that are being hired right now by the Bucks, is that it's guys that you can really respect for various reasons. And I like what he has to do. But yeah, I still think there's some concerns there because he's never been a pro coach. And, you know, does he have the people that he needs? He's shown the ability to adapt at college, but can he do that in the NFL? Is he going to have the guys lined up in the right spots? And is he going to have the guys to do the things he wants to do? And I think that's still a concern.
And the most, probably the most important thing is, as being a quarterback guy and being a guy that's the, what we hear about Jeff Tedford is Mike Glennon. He's the quarterback of the team right now. Like you said, we're pretty sure, and it seems pretty obvious that since sometime in between the day that Lovie just got hired and the day that Lovie got fired from the Bears, somewhere in between there, he and Jeff Tedford hooked up and said, yeah, whenever I get my next shot, you're going to be the guy. Do you think that they were looking at quarterbacks at that point and decided, okay, this is probably the guy we're going to look at? Or do you think they said, we're going to be able to fix whoever we wind up with and we're going to go from there? So in other words, what's the likelihood that the Bucks A, make a move up, or B, draft a quarterback at 7?
Well, I can't imagine that with the jobs out there that Tedford and Lovie sat down and said Mike Glennon was the guy that they wanted.
Especially because the Lions were available.
I mean, and even the Redskins job was available. And I mean, people think, you know, RG3 had a bad year, but he was coming off an ACL injury that he recovered from a bit too quickly. And I mean, he's a really good quarterback with a ton of talent. And that's a spot where, you know, a guy like Lovie and Tedford could have gone and got the most out of him. Or Houston, you've got the number one pick. You're sure to get whichever quarterback in the draft you want. That said, I think that obviously Lovie's ties to Tampa may have had a bigger influence than the quarterback situations. But quarterback situations aside, I think that Tedford can get more out of Glennon than Sullivan and Schiano did. But I'm not sure that that's enough to say Glennon is some sure thing who's going to be what the Bucks need moving forward. And I really think that they do need to get a quarterback in the draft. But really, there's only two options I feel comfortable with at 7 or above. And because of that, that kind of limits, you know, I'm not sure that it's something that you can really bank on considering the amount of QB needy teams ahead of the Bucks. But I do think that that's something that the Bucks should pursue. And I think that no matter which way you go, Tedford's going to get more out of the quarterback than Sullivan did. But the issue then becomes, like, do you wind up in a situation like the Bengals where you're getting a lot out of a mediocre quarterback, and that's just kind of what's holding you back from being a better team at this point?
That's kind of where I wanted to go next, was that within the last couple of days and over the first round of the playoffs, there were a number of different scenarios in which teams with subpar quarterbacks found themselves on the outs because of they were just not able to get over the hump. The Bengals were the one that really stuck out to me, but I thought the Eagles kind of went down the same path. I didn't think Nick Foles had a great game in that game. And then Alex Smith, they put themselves in a position where they're way ahead. They need to run out the clock and they weren't able to do much running. But then when they leaned back on Alex Smith, it really wasn't there. He made mistakes. He put them in the bad spots. Meanwhile, the winning quarterbacks were Drew Brees, were Andrew Luck. I mean, it only makes sense. Aaron Rodgers winds up losing yesterday, but Kaepernick, for whatever reason, is elite when he plays the Packers. He may not be elite against anybody else, but he's always elite against the Packers.
Well, and he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Yeah.
He's good enough that you're not thinking that he's a weakness on the team. We think now Andy Dalton's probably a weakness on the team. And the Bengals are a team that if you look at what they're how they're made, that's a very similar team to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The yeah. way that they're built with a number of good skill position players on both sides of the field, that's a team that the Bucs can emulate, and the Bucs could get to that point. But they proved yesterday, without having a quarterback, it's really hard to even win a playoff game, let alone three or four. So quarterback is going to continue to be something we're going to talk about. And now that Tedford is part of this organization, the hope is that, like you said, he can get more out of whoever they wind up with. But for me, the proof was in the pudding. Yes, the last 2 days, you need to have the elite quarterback, or else you're going to have a really hard time the way this league is set up now.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if you just look at the quarterbacks who are left, Peyton, Breeze, Wilson, Kaepernick, Rivers, who, you know, was one of the best and kind of fell off because
and having a resurgent year of one of his best of his career.
Yeah, that's encouraging for the Bucs, is that you can get more out of a guy with the right coaches, but you're not starting with the same base level of talent with Mike Glennon as you are with Phillip Rivers. So that's obviously, you know, a bit of a concern. I mean, you know, like, so Tom Brady's still there. Andrew Luck is still there. Most of these guys are, and don't get me wrong, Joe Flacco and Eli Manning have won Super Bowls recently. But the problem with those guys is that you can win a Super Bowl with them and you can also miss the playoffs with them. But Peyton Manning doesn't miss the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers doesn't miss the playoffs. Tom Brady doesn't miss the playoffs. And now it seems Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick don't miss the playoffs. And I understand that the ultimate goal is winning a Super Bowl. And Joe Flacco and Eli Manning and Trent Dilfer and Brad Johnson and et cetera have done that. Matt Hasselbeck and Rex Grossman got to Super Bowls. I understand that. And I'm not arguing against that. But those teams have also been bad. And those teams also don't win consistently. And those teams also needed to get quote-unquote hot at the right time. I would much rather see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers turn into the Atlanta Braves and make 10 straight playoffs and only win one Super Bowl rather than be the Ravens right now, where you're down, up, down, up, down, up. Because, quite frankly, playing meaningful games in January is about the most fun that there can be for a sports fan, for an NFL fan. And you don't get that all the time with a Eli Manning or a Joe Flacco. You don't always get that. And part of what makes those teams successful is the players around them, and the Bucs have all those things, and the Bucs could be successful even with Mike Glennon. But when you look at the teams that are always successful, I mean, think about the only dynasties in NFL history. They've all had, you know, the great quarterback. You got Brady, you've got, you know, Young and Montana. I mean, quarterback play was different, you know, but I mean, like Staubach and Aikman and guys like that, like back earlier with the Cowboys. I mean, and Bradshaw, really, and Bart Starr. Yeah. If you can point to a guy and say, among his peers, this guy is one of the best, you can also usually point to him and say, if he's also got a good team around him, he's contending for the Super Bowl every year. So, I mean, NFL history is just littered with guys who build dynasties around the quarterback. And I'm not saying that Mike Glennon can't win. And that's never what I've said, and that's never what I'll say. I know that you're a little more harsh on Glennon, and I understand that because, quite frankly, I'm kind of sick of not having a quarterback in Tampa that I can say definitively is one of the best in the league. Because that's never happened. I've never been able to say that. But going into 2014 with Mike Glennon, I'm just worried that the Bucs can get into a position where they feel like they have an Andy Dalton, and it turns out to be that they have an Andy Dalton. Because that's not a good situation. That's being in, and I don't know who the original person who said this. I know that Joe says it a lot, but I know a lot of people other said it. You get into QB purgatory, where you're never going to be close enough to the first pick to get the next guy, and you're never going to be good enough to win a Super Bowl every year. And so that's why I really do think that the Bucs need to make a move in the draft. And
this is a rare year where already we're not even close to the draft, but already number one and number two have also already said we will move. We'll think about moving back. That doesn't happen every year. That's actually pretty rare that one and two want to go back. And you and I agree there are probably two quarterbacks that are available. I think one is a lot higher than the other, and that's Bridgewater. Yes. I think Bridgewater is Hall of Fame worthy.
Yes.
That's how good I think Teddy Bridgewater is. Yeah. I don't think Blake Bortles is going to be a Hall of Famer. I think he can be an excellent quarterback. I don't know that I would move all the way up and cash the future in for Blake Bortles.
No.
I would absolutely do so to for get Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah. I'm of the same mindset. I would trade up in the draft to get Teddy Bridgewater. I would go as high as one. I would give up multiple firsts and seconds to get Teddy Bridgewater. Blake Bortles, I mean, if someone picking five or four wants to move back for cheap, I would do that. Like, if somebody wants, like, just a third to move up, I mean, I know we don't have a third, but, like, a fourth and a future third or something like that, I'd do that to go get Bortles. I'm not giving up a first or a second to go get him. Because, like you said, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a legend at quarterback. I actually did an article last night. It's my kind of my first attempt at really scouting a player. But I see in Bortles kind of a mix between Big Ben and Andrew Luck. I see a guy who's big and tough to take down. He's pretty athletic. And when his feet are right, which his feet are his biggest concern, he doesn't always have great footwork. But when his feet are right, he throws the ball about as well as anybody could throw it. There are a couple issues or a couple weaknesses. If you want to talk about, you know, level of competition, which I don't really care about, particularly because it's UCF. It's not like he's Joe Flacco from Delaware or something. That's obviously a concern. But, I mean, this guy, if you're like me and you just like quarterbacks for the skills that they have, he's got all those. But if you're also someone who's into this whole QB wins thing and is he a winner and does he have intangibles, in the fourth quarter of close games, he had like an 80% completion percentage, 11 yards per throw, and had six come from behind wins. I mean, I don't know how much better you can get if you're one of these quarterback wins guys. You like him more than Bridgewater if you're one of these people who, like, he's a winner. Like, if you like AJ McCarron because he's a winner, you should like Blake Bortles more, because Blake Bortles is more of a winner. He has less around him and he does more with it to win games. So I think no matter what perspective you come into looking at a quarterback from, I think you can like Blake Bortles. I think he's safely a top 15 pick. I'm just worried that someone's going to take him higher because they really need a quarterback. I'm hoping that Derek Carr, AJ McCarron, and Johnny Manziel all get hyped up over the course of the next few months. And
which is possible.
Yeah.
Certainly possible.
Because I think that there is a realistic scenario where Blake Bortles is there at seven. Do the Bucs take him? That's another question. I would hope that they did. But, you know, if the picks ahead of the Bucs are everyone, all of the defensive players that I would like in terms of pass rushers are gone, and Teddy's gone, and the offensive tackles are gone, and Bortles is still there, I think Bortles is the best pick. I'd rather have Bortles than an offensive tackle. I'd rather have Bortles than Sammy Watkins. And I'd rather have Bortles than a tight end, because I think that Bortles makes the players that the Bucs have on offense better. And I think that that's really meaningful, is that a quarterback actively makes his wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs better. And I think that Bortles would do that. And I think that Tedford can do a lot with Bortles, because one of his issues is mechanical with his footwork. And I think that Tedford can help him fix that, which makes Tampa one of the best places for Bortles to go. I think that Bortles would step in and be better than Mike Glennon from day one. I think he's more brave than Glennon. I think he's got more guts in the pocket in terms of stepping up and facing pressure and not being fazed by the blitz. I think that he's got better arm than Glennon. He's way more athletic than Glennon. We talked about how Glennon is kind of Alex Smith without the athleticism. I think in his first year, Blake Bortles could look a lot like Alex Smith, and then he would progress from there as he gets his footwork right. He's got more arm talent than Alex Smith right away. But I think at his worst, he's Alex Smith. Like, if he doesn't pan out, he's still Alex Smith, which you can be okay with at the contract that you get with the seventh pick. So I really like him. I'm sold on him. And it really does depend on what the Bucs decide to do. But I would be fully on board with a cheap trade up or just waiting till seven to get him, because I think he's going to be really good.
Well, there's certainly a lot of time between now and the draft, and there's certainly a lot of time where we're going to get to discuss, and we're probably going to go through just about every quarterback and everybody towards the top of the draft and what different scenarios the Bucs might go down during the next few podcasts moving forward, and then certainly a lot more before the draft. But in between now and then, I think we are going to learn a little bit more about how Lovey views Mike Glennon, because it almost has to be asked in this press conference that's coming up in a few hours. We're definitely going to learn a lot more about the direction of the general manager and how the interaction is going to be with Lovey. That's certainly coming up as well. But I think a lot of questions certainly can be answered in this Lovey press conference, but also I don't think we should be expecting much, and that's why we decided to do this well before the press conference and not right after, because I don't think too much is going to change. But if it does, we'll go over it all next week. You have anything else you want to get in before, or anything that you kind of want to hear from this press conference?
No. I kind of already know what to expect with Lovey. I mean, I'd love to know who the GM is. I'd love if that's announced. I'm interested to see who the rest of his staff are. If he does get like Tony Sperano to be offensive line coach, I think that would be a huge addition to the offense. I'm anxious to kind of just see everything become official and to start having Lovie Smith openly and actively talk about the Buccaneers and what he wants to do with them. Even if he doesn't say much, just to kind of get an idea of what he has to say and things like that. That's really what I'm looking forward to. So it's nothing in particular, just kind of that excitement of, you know, what is Lovie going to do? And now that he's able to actually really actually talk about the team, what is he going to say about them?
Well, the Bucs definitely do have their new coach. We both agree it's a good hire. It seems like the Bucs are heading in a much better direction. One thing that we can take, well, I don't know what to take out of it, but the fact is Mike McCoy won a playoff game less than a year after he was hired. Hopefully that's the same here in Tampa. The Bucs will hopefully play a playoff game less than a year from the day that Lovey was hired, and hopefully we'll actually be able to win a playoff game. But we have a long way before that. We're probably going to talk about 51 more times before that, and hopefully we talk about a few wins in between now and then. But for today, Lovey Smith's the new head coach. Jeff Tedford's the new offensive coordinator. We think Leslie Frazier is the new defensive coordinator, but we're not 100% sure on that. We have no clue what the general manager situation is going to be. Chris Ballard seems to be the guy. We don't know where Chris Stokes will wind up, but we will wait and see. As for today, I'm Ken Bolke, been joined with Leo Howell, and we are done. I'm going to stay with them on top of the ship and top of bay with them. Other teams forfeit, scared to play with them. Ain't no losing in the Raymond James Stadium. We made chickens out of Falcons, Cubs out of Bears, kittens out of